Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here at Beer Sessions Radio. This is the first show of 2019. It's January 8th. It's a Tuesday. We've got a very special show. We're going to introduce everybody, but there's a very cool collaboration that happened with a number of some of the best New York City beer bar and establishments and Interborough Brewing. It's called Dead Prez. So Joel from The Sampler, and he's known as @Uptown_Ales. And he's been associated with Uptown Beer Society, but he's really the main guy at The Sampler in Bushwick. He's a very important guy in New York City beer scene. Joel, welcome to the show, man.
Introduce
the project that you guys worked on, and we'll get a chance to talk to everybody in the room, because there's quite a few other beer bar owners here and really important New York City beer guys.
Cool. So at our opening a year ago at The Sampler, my whole vision was, instead of getting these bigger craft beer brands to kind of like, oh, I'm a swipe, I'm going to support you, I'm going to give you this, I'm like, I'm going to start supporting way more of local breweries. Hopefully they appreciate it and they do a collaboration with us. And I just kept shooting ideas to different breweries. And the first brewery to be like, hell yeah, I'm down, no problem, let's do it, was Jesse from Interborough, off the strength of nothing. And I told him, to make it make more sense, because just putting our logo on a can, are we going to sell the beer? Is anybody going to want to buy the beer? I was like, why don't I just incorporate everyone together? Because strength in numbers is really important thing. And I thought about everybody that had Dominican representation, because we wanted to make basically a Pilsner in August around like Dominican Day Parade. So I was like, hey, Bronx Beer Hall has always employed Dominican females and males, as far as I know, since they first started. Beer Wax was like, no thoughts there. They're like our sister bar, really close friends of ours. And then Beer with Flavor was part of the first collaboration. He's now the taproom manager at Other Half. And then I was like, I need somebody from Washington Heights. And I was like, it has to be Juan. I know Juan's been doing his thing. He's brewed at Kuka. He runs Bar 180, now Bar 177. So that's basically how I made everybody come together.
So let's get everybody to say hi. So yeah. Juan, say hi. Tell us about your place and a little bit about this Dead Prez collaboration beer.
Yeah, my name is Juan from Bar 180 and Bar 177. These guys just reach out to me.
So you guys you're in Manhattan?
Manhattan, yeah, Washington High. Yes. I had 12 years in the business. I used to work for Manhattan Beers and Oak, between both companies. I had 12 years. And yeah, like he said, Joel reached out to me because I used to brew some stuff with Kukas and stuff. We make this great collaboration. This is our second with Interborough.
So how did you guys make the collaboration? Jesse's here too from Interborough. I'm going to try to get everyone to say hi. But, you know, what's the process like when you have all these different guys? And who else is it? Anthony, were you part of it from Bronx Beer Hall?
Yeah, absolutely. Jesse, you want
to? Yeah, so Joel originally stopped into the tasting room and talked to my business partner, Laura. And, you know, as soon as I spoke to Joel and saw sort of what he had in mind and, you know, the group of people that was behind it, I just was, for us, obviously, at Interborough, we've done a lot of collaborations. And for us, there's not a lot of outreach we can do within the beer community other than making beer with people and trying to push our product as much as we possibly can based on quality. So as a small business owner, Laura and I were both right away really interested in the idea of reaching out to a community that we didn't feel like we had much direct contact with, and, you know, the Dominican community in New York City. Huge, vibrant, awesome community of people. And so working directly with a bunch of bar owners who could represent that community and help us bring a beer that was made for a specific community in New York City around a holiday that people love to celebrate all over the city seemed like a great idea. Plus, you know, making a lager, a beer that is really approachable by, you know, to most people, whereas, you know, in the past, I feel like the, you know, craft beer community or craft beer makers in general have skewed so intensely towards just like, you know, wild flavors and esoteric beers where we could say, hey, let's make a really good quality beer that everybody can get down
with. Since we planned the show out, the response has been crazy. I mean, Brandon, the owner of Roberta's, wanted to try the beer, and Rafael Espinal was running for public advocate. Sorry, he couldn't make it. Some of you were expecting him on. He's on New York One right now. But he was like, you got to get me some of the Dead Prez. It seems to be that everyone's talking about it. And Chris, from Beerwax, you know, another great beer bar. Tell us a little bit about, again, your involvement.
This is the third collaboration we've done with Innerbur. So when Joel approached us about doing the collaboration for El Prez, I was like, it's a no-brainer. I love working with Innerbur. They're amazing folks. At Beerwax, we curate both amazing craft beer and vinyl records. We have a lot of great DJs that stop by. So hip-hop is one of the main themes. So Jesse and I, you know, the owner and brewmaster, have connected on that. So it seemed like just a logical way to be involved. Joel and I know each other from way back. We used to dream about, as people of color, as Dominicans in the craft beer industry, how can we make something that matters to us and to our people, our families, beers that resonate with the folks that drink a lot of lagers on the island. So it was really an amazing thing that we can all get together, a lot of different bar owners in across New York City, and make something like this happen.
So the other guys joined in too, like, you know, Shane at Carmine Street and Anthony and Paul at Bronx Beer Hall. I mean, how do lagers do versus IPAs? Because for me, this is right on. So what is this? This beer is what, Joel? It's a Vienna-style lager?
Vienna-style lager. It's 50% Pilsner malt, 50% Vienna malt, right?
Yeah,
with a touch of Munich.
Touch of Munich. So I wanted to make something that was like kind of... holla. I wanted to make something that was kind of like a Dos Equis. When I think winter, I think dark lager, but I didn't want something too dark like a Schwarz beer or like a Dunkel. I wanted something that had like a biscuity, like fruity... effervescent feel to it, but was also super crushable because El Prez was a dry hop pill, so I wanted to go winter, and he made it happen. Jesse made it happen, picked the perfect ingredients, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Great.
I'm applauding that.
Yeah, Shane, how do things, so your Carmine Street, tell us about your spot.
Yeah, so my name is Shane. I'm from Carmine Street Beers in the West Village of Manhattan. We're a family-owned and operated bottle shop and bar. We do sell stuff from Innerbur all the time, happily. Take what we can get.
Great, man.
100% Anthony. Indian owned.
100% Indian owned. Man.
So we got Indian, family. Dominican, Puerto Rican,
we're Puerto
Italian.
Rican. So this is Anthony.
My name is Paul Ramirez from the Bronx Beer Hall.
And we opened the Bronx Beer Hall about 6 years ago with a real focus on local. So our whole thing was always like we wanted to keep it as local as we could get. And we always wanted to represent the culture of the Bronx. And the Bronx, as we know, is largely Latinx, which is what they say, not Latino or Latina, Latinx. And like Joel said, you know, we make it a big point not only to feature...
Is that gender proof? Is that what it is?
It's gender proof. Exactly what it is. Ah. Yeah. I found that out last week.
My preferred gender pronoun, personal pronoun, is it he, she?
We went to Fresh Fest, the first black brewery fest in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they were calling our table the Latinx tent. And we didn't know what the hell. We had black shorties twerking.
The first term I thought it was like Generation X and Latin and Latino. I didn't know what it was.
Cool. Yeah, it does sound cool. You know, so on the way in, Joel said that you guys were a significant business at the Arthur Avenue market, weren't you?
Like, yeah, so we are located in the center of the Arthur Avenue retail market. And like I was saying, you know, our big thing was that it wasn't just about opening a bar to make money. It was we wanted to represent local businesses and local culture. And, you know, we go out of our way to work local and promote local whenever we can. And so we're a big fan of Inderboro. We're a big fan of Joel and everyone in the room. Right? And he hit up Paul and, you know, started talking about the project. And we were, 100% in.
Yeah. I mean, we're not a brewery by any means, and we've done collaborations with, with Big Alice, where we've had a house sour, mango apricot house sour, right? And that was actually created by one of our Dominican employees. It was her idea. She wanted something that she knew would be sweet, easy, and that would resonate with the Dominican community.
Say your name.
Andreina Uribe.
Shout out, Andreina.
Chilindrina. Yes. So that was all her idea. And then when Joel came to us with this collaboration, and an idea that we would actually have cans with our own branding, with all the logos of all these great Latin-owned bars throughout New York City. I mean, how could we decline it? You know, with our first night when we put El Prez on, we kicked the keg in less than 3.5 hours.
That's great. Yeah.
We had a bomba plena event, which is traditional Puerto Rican music. And obviously it was a full Latino crowd and they murdered the keg.
That's right.
And it was well received and it was loved. And the same thing, when we did the release for Dead Prez, we had a Bomba Plena event that same night, less than 5 hours that first keg went. We killed two kegs in less than 48 hours.
Jesse, you like hearing that, don't you? I like this Dead Prez beer a lot, man. This is really, nice. Cheers to you guys. Really that's a great beer for the season. And Juan's over here. The most enthusiastic guy in the room here, besides Joel, and everyone, you guys are all like outstanding representatives of the craft beer community here. But Juan, I've never met you, and just from this project, I've learned about your bar. So bar 180,
our goals,
and bar 177. Yeah, so tell me about your bars. Are they near each other? What's the number?
They're
near, is it the street?
They're near. Our vision is to be honest with you. This is the first time I'm going to talk about it. I want to be one of our bar had to be. Part of one of the terminal, either Delta or JetBlue. This is how I see my future with this company. Mm. And we need to be there representing a craft business because every time I take a flight to go anywhere, what I see is those big companies that I'm not gonna mention here. Mm. And we don't have no quality on those places. So I see myself very farther as a brand. I don't know if it's going to be about 180 or about 177. But whatever we're going to do, we're going to do it with our heart. And I see myself
flying. You'd be bar JetBlue.
I don't know, but but this is one of my focus that we need to be focused, basically. To be one of those two terminal. Cause I'm Latin. I'm Dominican. So... And I wanted to offer to my people a great stuff, like not only Dominican, like Caribbeans, the entire Caribbean islands, like Puerto Rico, Cubans, everybody be part of the islands. So I wanted to offer that choice, experience. You know, like craft beer, great ingredient, great brewers, and quality. That's basically it.
On that note, I'm gonna ask a question about beer culture. So, like, it seems that do every country or every region have a beer style that they like? Like, for example, in some island countries like Jamaica, some reason they're drinking Guinness Foreign Extra Stout. You guys have this El Prez style. Does anyone want to talk about the beer cultures of where they're from or how you see, like, why was someone drinking a stout in the Caribbean?
Well, I can't tell you much of them. I'm Leo, the owner of the Sampler and partners with Beer Wax, and a lot of the stuff that we came with the idea, especially speaking with Joel's been an amazing influence behind all of this. It's great that we have a platform that we can use, and breweries such as Interboro that are open to have us experiment with this kind of things, and apparently it's been very successful. If I'm not wrong, I think El Prez Pilsner was one of the number one sellers for Interboro this summer, and that goes to show. I mean, most of it mainly came out of the idea that we got to introduce our peoples the craft beer business, which we own. How can we introduce them? How can we get them a gateway towards a drinking craft beer. So used to drinking everything that's out there that's not part of the craft beer culture. And, you know, the idea of coming up with a Pilsner called El Prez is a perfect example of how that coincides. Coincidentally, like, I did a little history on El Presidente beer, and it's a company that started by an American that went into Dominican Republic and started Cervecería Nacional Dominicana. And at the time, you know, it was 1929, around that time, 1930s, there was a dictator, Trujillo. So obviously they had to, anything that had to do with business had to be run towards with the president. So he was smart enough. He named the beer after a dictator called Presidente. It started off as a dark beer, but it wasn't well received in the country. It was until the 60s where it turned into a Pilsner, the one that we drink today. And very successful beer. It's actually synonymously known as like a Dominican culture beer. Like you think about Presidente, you think about Dominican Republic. And it's just a refreshing. They serve it almost freezing cold in Dominican Republic because I guess it's the temperature.
It's the best.
And it's honestly, it's a beer that, I mean, as a consumer.
What a napkin in the
middle. I think I should have steak in it. Is that your saying called?
But you drink it fast, and then you take the next one out of the ice. Right?
No, yeah, it's definitely. Right. They actually have the refrigerators at the temperature just above the freezing level, because they serve it, as they say, the vestida de novia, and it's like as a bridesmaid, which is dressed in white, which is like you know, a deep frosty. I think Chris, by the way, did a nice little review on beers in Dominican Republic. Unfortunately, couldn't really find that many. It was just such a monopoly of beers owned by certain companies. I mean, like, again, it was just taken over by Ambev, which was now runs pretty much takes over, which is interesting to know as... Once it got taken over by Ambev, and we come out with the El Prez, I just wanted to know, because I know Jesse has some issues when we had the label with us. I don't know if Jesse wants to speak a little bit upon that.
Shout outs to Santo Domingo Brewing Company that opened their doors this year, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Craft Brewery?
We're in full contact with them. Future plans coming soon.
All right, Joel. This is the whole thing, is what's Joel's future plans? That's what. I tell you what, let's just do this. We have a lot to talk about. And Jesse, do you want to say anything about the El Prez or the intellectual property? Or
yeah,
anything?
Intellectual property rights are kind of a bummer. Yeah, so Presidente reached out to us right after all the beer was sold. And so we agreed not to do that label again. That was when we did Dead Prez. We removed the medallion that would be reminiscent of the Presidente logo. You know, for when we first all got together to brew, the name El Prez really came from, though, the idea that, hey, we're making a lager that's good from a bunch of Dominicans. Let's, you know, El Prez seemed like the obvious name. So, and we all agreed on it right away. And I think it, you know, what we did with the label in terms of putting the Dominican flag on it and making it something that Dominicans could relate to, even as the label, did inspire a certain level of pride within the community. And I think that worked for us and helped get even more people talking about it and more people to try the beer, which was the goal, right? Was to make a beer that people was a craft beer that people would be open to trying. Just because when we all met the first time, it was like, well, how often do you hear people be like, well, I don't want to try that. It's too heavy. It's too much flavor, right. Too hoppy, too. Yeah. And we were just trying to get past all those barriers.
You know what's great about it? We're going to take a short break. Now, since I've been looking at the Dead Prez label, I want to go to Dominican Republic. So we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Got to start in the heights.
I swear to God.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit Korin.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we're with the Latinx show today, man. So I was just saying, this Dead Press beer that these guys made with Innerborough is so inspiring. I was just saying that since we've been playing this show, the identity and the story behind it has made me not only crave this beer and want to drink it, made me want to go to Dominican Republic. And Juan, you got inspired. So talk more about this collaboration that you guys did.
Yeah, my name is Juan from Bar 180 and Bar 177, Washington High. So this is myself talking. For this beer collaboration, what I feel important is that everyone here in this beer collaboration made some important contribution when they all together made like a 360 promotion, what has become this beer collaboration and the freight one. So a lot of people follow Joel's, the bars, and you know, and whoever is part of this beer collaboration, shout out to Beer Flavors from the third one. And people react to that, you know, like, and that's made us to be strong because we all united. Paul is Puerto Rican, you know, like, we have some good brother from the island. For him, it doesn't matter that if he's Dominican or Puerto Rican, it's just we come together. That's and right. This is what we represent. We represent the Caribbean and we represent Latin people.
100%.
New York.
100%. NYC rocking.
So I think that also, this is Leo from Sample again. I think what resonated a lot also is the label. The label with the flag. Dominicans in general are very prideful, and Latino people in general are like, very prideful and showy offies, to say the least. But when they see the flag, they're like, yo, I want that. I mean, I got people calling me from all over the place because they just saw the beer. They didn't even care what it tastes like or not. And then on top of that, it tasted amazing. I mean, it was just a win-win situation. Mm-hmm. So kudos to Jesse and Interborough. Thank you a lot. Let's piggyback on them.
Yeah, for sure.
That whole label is just amazing. It's just amazing to see such a great company in the craft beer business like Interborough. And showing the flag, like, it's amazing. It's just a crazy, crazy thing for anybody to see that in the neighborhood. And like, yo, I want that beer. And that's a perfect example of what we're trying to do and introducing our people in the business.
Even the fact that, like, everybody wanted that beer, it says something that there was enough buzz and enough noise around it that AmBev was like, oh, hey, guys, you need to stop doing that.
Why are you guys, are these bars and all these other craft beer bars in New York and not us?
Exactly. And we were the only ones rocking it. You got to think five bars, you know, it was in various shops. Interborough had it on site at the brewery as well. And for us to make enough noise via just social media and have this, you know, obviously it's a head nod to Presidente as it is, but for them to hit us up and be like, hey, you know what, you need to stop doing that.
if you check the hashtag Summer of Pills, it's just us and Therese Vallette all summer, like post.
And I think, you know, we told Jesse he needs to frame the letter that they sent, and we need to all have a copy in all of our bars. That's a sign of success, exactly.
Until they make us sign non-disclosure agreements. So no, but I think that what the fun part of a collaboration like this is getting an opportunity to make something with a large group of people who are all going to get behind it, and then everybody goes out and says, "Hey, look what we did!" and has so much pride and is so happy with the final product and that the quality of it is something that everybody can get behind. That's, I think, what it's like, amplification in a city that's, you know, like New York City, a small city where like the beer scene is like sort of like an underground niche thing that people either, you know, you're either down with or some people just are completely oblivious to. It gave us an opportunity to make something that sort of was outside of the typical beer geek beer sort of thing. And it got, and then we had, you know, on the first one, we had five five different brands, and this one we have six different brands who are all out there talking about it. And that's part of what makes it such a fun project to be involved in, because you're it's a group effort to, like, hey, let's see how many people we can get talking about this.
And
let's,
like,
see how many people we can get to drink it.
To add to that, we're also representing our own culture. Like, there's a lot of, not to shun anybody, but there's a lot of breweries in New York and around the United States using terms like on the six train, never been to the Bronx, using Latino ingredients, not doing anything for the neighborhood. I gotta say it because it's not fair. Using words like Burley Oak, Coquito, like, what does that have to do with y'all? Y'all, our grandmothers make Coquito every year, and like, we drink it and share. Like, we can't even make that beer now, or we're going to still make it, but it's like, why are you trying to beat us in a rat race when it has to do with representing our own culture? So thank God, like, nobody beat us to this rat race. But at the end of the day, we want to represent our own people in our communities and give back. And we are that gateway into drinking better. All these bars, like, never, like, we get big brands begging us, and we say no every single day, no matter how financially unstable
100%
we become. Like, we stick, we stay real. We're like, nah, we're serving only craft. I don't care if you're going to swipe straight up. And that's
Chris goes next for it.
I mean, just a quick piggyback, and it's a little bit of a tangent, but it's related, and the appropriation of hip-hop culture and a lot of labels. And I wonder, I mean, there are a lot of brewers that are really into hip-hop, but some that I'm wondering, like, do they really know that album or what they're trying to say?
Or who's buying
by
it?
By saying that.
Right.
You know, I know for a fact that Innerborough lives up to that.
Yes.
I love hip-hop.
Jesse has, you know, a serious pedigree in hip hop. You can check his resume, but there are other places that you just wonder, like, are they just trying to ride, you know, the bandwagon with something that's catchy?
Don't
right
sweat
now?
The technique.
So going back to this is Juan from Bar 180 and Bar 177. Going back what you said early, like, in my bar personally, I do 1% imported and 80% New York State beer company. And the other rest is
wow, that's good.
All over the place, like California, San Diego's, you know, and all those places have great beer. But like he said, like, we're unique, you know, we're more local, you know, we support local business. We go every single day to all local business and consumer. And my family, when I take a dinner, I go to a local business, and I'm not traveling out of the state, like to New Jersey and close state, to eat or to drink. I consume what we have here. And I read a lot before we take any single product to our bar, because this, for us, is very important. So
yeah. Joel, tell us about building the community, because you've really been, I think you're called the Beer Whisperer.
Yeah.
Your Uptown Ales, Uptown Beer Society, building beer a community. Whisperer.
For sure. So, 5 years ago.
Let's pop another beer too. I know you guys brought a bunch.
We brought all, by the way, we brought all beer that's have people of color. So we got Harlem, we got Dykeman, we got Equilibrium, we got Other Half, which is employed Dominican and Puerto Rican brewers.
Let's try it. We'll try
Jerez,
Dykeman, and Equilibrium.
We brought all people of color beers. So my backstory is I got into beer about 6-7 years ago, and I had my first craft beer at Bronx Ale House in the Bronx because I'm the mother of my children, my one child, was a big foodie and beer head. So we would travel from there to Beer International, all uptown, Buddha Beer Bar. And that's how I kind of got into beer. And then I said, wait, I need a job. Like, this stuff is awesome. Let me try to get a job. So I went on Craigslist and I got a job at the Sampler 5 years ago, where I met Richard Mercado, which met Leo Taneo, which made the Sampler happen. And you never know who's sitting at your bar. So law of attraction is real, and you should really, like, find out what people are doing in your establishment. After that, I was picked up by Taproom 307. I was mentored by Haley and Steven, which opened Beer Barrio down the south, and Becerra. And then I went on to open up the territory of the Bronx under SKI Beer Distributors, Paul being number one account of mine, always supporting.
That's it,
we've done a ton of events. I was always looking in a niche in my portfolio because he would not buy anything that wasn't made in New York.
Yep.
So I'm like, oh shit, they make Speakeasy in Hebrew. Oh, they make, Monty Python at Saratoga. Let's do a movie night. Yeah. So we would always, like, he'd be like, fine, as long as it's, and he would look at a Montauk can and be like, yo, bro, this is made in Massachusetts. You trying to get
straight
me in trouble?
Up, like, straight up.
I'll pick this shit up.
They're going to call in.
Shout out to Montauk, but
they, listen to the show.
A lot of people, no, it's nothing against Montauk. A lot of people build up their brands and they, you know, they have contracts in other places because it's hard to get a contract in New York. Speaking of hard to get a contract, Dykeman couldn't get a contract in New York for a long time. And finally, Flagship made three beers for them. And Torch and Crown in the Bronx made a few beers for them, so thankfully. So
let's taste a Dykeman. I haven't tasted
Dykeman. Yeah, it's a Chinola whistle. What Chinola is passion fruit. This has lime peel and coriander. Jugo de Chinola is served at all the chimichurri trucks late at night when you're drunk in Washington Heights, the Bronx, Harlem. You get a nice chimichurri, which is like a chopped burger kind of sandwich with cabbage, and you get a tall glass of the sweetest passion fruit juice.
Sweet.
With ice, it's still sweet as hell. You can make four drinks out of that. But anyway, to continue, after SKI Beer, I worked for Randolph Beer, Prospect Heights Beer Works, City Hops, all around New York, just learning every single thing I needed to know before becoming an operating partner at the Sampler. So distro, management, assistant management, bartender, server, everything. It's like you have to learn how to wipe a table before you give orders. I don't care. A lot of people open up establishments and never swept the floor in their life.
That's great. Great introduction, Joel. So I want to tell you about this beer. So Dykeman, I mean, I met the guys before, but I didn't really know where they were making beer and where they're at.
Juan Camilo is the founder. I help him on the side, trying to get into accounts and bring awareness to his brand. He just fell in love with beer. He used to work in Wall Street. And he made this one that we're drinking right now at Flagship because they have a nice canning line. And he's a one-person army. Besides me, he's trying to open up actually on 10th Ave where Umbrellas was. So he's trying to get his investors to move forward and building management to move forward and have the one of the only breweries in Manhattan that exists.
In Inwood, right?
Yeah, in Inwood, right by between 207 and Dykeman Street.
Great. And let's have some of the guys. So Shane, Paul, you know, let's talk about some of the beers you're selling. It seems like you guys are selling a lot of New York beers. What are the philosophies that you have as a beer spot?
I mean, the point of the Bronx Beer Hall, you know, like my brother said earlier, we were all about celebrating Bronx culture and really reintroducing. We're inside of a historically landmark building. The district is historic for being Italian mostly, with only Puerto Ricans inside of the market space.
So that's what you're so you're the first Latinx business.
Latinx business, yeah.
In the market. Sure. I pick up on things within the
Arthur Avenue market setting, right? So we know that Arthur Avenue is the number two tourist destination in the borough. So How do you lure more tourists? How do you ensure that, you know, we're reintroducing Bronxites to Arthur Avenue, but still entertaining what the tourists are doing there and introducing them to what Bronx culture is today? So with that, we were like, we had to stay 100% New York. You know, from our wines to our all of our beer setup, like everything has been 100% New York for the past. We're gonna be coming up on our six-year anniversary now.
February 1st.
All right.
February 1st, 6 years. And it was just a no-brainer. Was it difficult 6 years ago to find strictly New York brands? But with the boom, you know, with just the boom in the craft beer industry, New York City and New York State has seen, you know, a large number of breweries come in. Some have come in, open and folded, and others are thriving, you know. So we've made really great relationships with these breweries from the minute they open their doors. And now, you know, we get allocated. We get a lot of... Very, you know, all the limited releases come to us first. Like we get hooked up because they know that we're pushing their brand only pushing it further, and we're pushing it to an entirely different demographic than they would.
And one thing specific about where you guys are at the Arthur Avenue Market. So if I'm shopping in the market, can I get a pint of beer from your bar and walk around while I'm shopping?
Hell yeah!
Oh yeah!
Don't tell the SLA, but sure.
I don't know if that's legal, but you could do it.
And then Shane, tell me a little more Carmine Street beer.
Yeah, so actually we opened Carmine in 2013, so we're going to celebrate 6 years in August, too.
It's your West Village, right?
Yeah.
West Village.
So, yeah, I mean, originally when we opened, it was strictly retail. And part of the reason we did open is it used to be a print shop, which was also run by my family. But in the summers, you know, my dad, you know, with all these giant, like, copying machines that would take up the entire floor space, it got hot in there, and, you know, like, we had a wine store next door. There was a bodega down the corner. But, you know, at the end of the day, you really want that beer when it's really hot out. Yeah. So I mean, it was the corner bodega was your first option, where Corona was $16.50 a six pack in 2013.
Wow,
which was ridiculous.
Really? Yeah,
and then your next best option was to hop
is
on
that
the hot.
Lucy?
Sorry.
Lucy's in the West Village.
Yeah. So your next best option is to jump on the F, take it two stops, and go to the Whole Foods on Houston. Mm. Neither which were great for anybody in the neighborhood. So, you know, as the printing shop kind of slowed down as time went on, my dad was like, well, what do we do? And we kind of hopped into beer just kind of accidentally because he was like, well, there's no good place to buy beer. We should do that. I don't think Corona should cost that much.
Do other guys feel that you hit that spot, the sweet spot, where you're like the first place in your neighborhood serving really good beer?
Yeah.
We were the first. I was the first employee, so I'm going to claim it. The sampler has been open for like 5-6 years, and we continued that. We were open before any craft beer bar.
In Bushwick.
In Bushwick, in Jefferson Street. There's nothing but KCBC and us right now.
And just to be clear, we weren't the first. The Tiger, and there's a whole bunch of great establishments right by us, but none of them sold retail beer. So that's what we were the first to do.
First person of color, though.
There's that.
And there's definitely, in Prospect Heights, quite a few spots. Some of those folks actually have been mentors to me, like Joe from Hops Hill. But I wanted to actually do a quick plug. You, Jimmy, mentioned building culture. And I was really floored. Every time I go to the Bronx Beer Hall, I'm floored by how they build culture. They're in the Bronx, the birthplace of hip-hop, have amazing DJs, and you see nothing but young brown and black folks having a great time that may be future craft beer consumers. But it's incredible. I was a former educator, and I worked in the Bronx, and to see... I'm in my 40s, so I can say they are young people. It's a beautiful thing that what they're doing in the Bronx Beer Hall.
They're all young people now.
You guys have to check out UVS Saturdays. It's every first Saturday. If you stand there from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., you will see a drastic change from like tourists to like kids of color just dancing and having a great time.
Well, let's talk about New York City is a city of color. I mean, my kids in public school, I take the subways. You go outside of certain neighborhoods, and this city is a city of color. And I think we should talk about that a little bit more. I wanted to really more represent your businesses, but we should talk about it. It was funny because, like, you're talking about 5-6 years ago. 5 years ago, people wanted me to do, you have to do a show about race and beer. And we tried to do that, but there wasn't really a lot of representation, but people didn't really know how to talk about it. You know, and then a couple years ago, a guy, a Thrillist writer, wrote an article about race and beer, and it won a James Beard Award. And it was the only time a beer article has won a James Beard Award. But now what you guys are doing, you guys really have to tell me what's going on. So let's talk about
that's
it.
That's awesome, because that's exactly what I wanted to piggyback on. Big shout out to Bronx Beer Hall. I went there last year. This is Leo, by the way, from the sampler. Last year, for the first time, I was floored. Exactly what Chris said. Chris actually took me up there. He's like, I got to go check out this place. I said, I've never been there. And it was just that. It's exactly the vibe we're trying to do at the sampler, the vibe that I'm sure that Chris is trying to do at Beer Wax. And it's just the culture of New York. You know, I was born and raised in Bushwick. I seen the transformation out here. I mean, where we're at right now, Roberta's, we could not walk around here in 20, 30 years ago. This was all full of hookers and bikers. And the graffiti was like unwanted. Now you see people touring to look at graffiti, which is amazing to me. Like, what the hell is going on? But it's all good and it's all love. It's because there's an appreciation of this culture. Like, there's nothing that's not influenced by hip-hop anymore. And there's nothing that's not influenced by Latino culture or culture in general with black culture. It's just this New York vibe that has really just come back and has come really, really strong, which is why it's being adopted by all these major companies. And there's nothing like, I challenge you to look around and see that something that's not influenced by what Big Daddy Kane wore back in the day when it comes to chains and hairstyles, and just the vibe is just so dope. It's amazing. So also at the sampler, I mean, this is the direction we're going. When I first went to the sampler, I was there as a customer, and it was nothing like what we're doing right now. We're incorporating the graffiti, and that's the way I'll put, just like a Beer Wax does with the vinyl, and Interboro has a history with the hip-hop. And Bronx Beer Hall is doing the dopest shit with their stuff up there, with the dancing and the young vibe. And so that's what it's all about. I think that's what we're, the direction we're trying to head and spearhead is that, is to embrace the New York culture the way it was and also incorporate what the new and the old all at once.
Hold on, guys. 1 second. We have to take a short break for a sponsorship break. We'll be right back and finish up the show in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Oh, by the way, this is our 10th anniversary. There's been, I don't know how many shows, but over 450 episodes of Beer Sessions Radio. But keep going, heritageradionetwork.org. There's going to be a lot of events happening this year. There's going to be Hall of Fame announcements of our best guests and best shows from all the other shows in the network as well. So just keep checking us out, heritageradionetwork.org. So this is a great show today. We're talking about the Dead Prez collaboration with a number of New York City beer bars of color in Inner Borough. So Joel, let's keep this going. We've got some great conversations going. You brought your buddy Matt from...
Yes.
Matt, tell us about Uptown Beer Society and a little bit about what you're doing in this project, the collaboration.
Cheers, everyone. This is Matt from the Uptown Beer Society and the Sampler. Part of what we try to do in Uptown Beer Society is celebrate and highlight these like cultural gems that we have that are not only exclusive in the product and the services that they do, like Bronx Beer Hall. They're inclusive, so you never feel like an outsider. It's a lot like a family environment. And yeah, well, Uptown Beer Society, we try to make a network of places where people who of color don't necessarily know that there's an access to drinking great beer because it's always billboards of these major corporations, and a lot of it is just we just don't know any better. So,
and when did you start talking about this idea? And
me and Joel developed Uptown Beer Society in 2014, was it?
Yeah, we just wanted to spearhead something. We didn't want to wait around. No one was trying to like pretty much invest in us. So we said, hey, let's make Uptown Beer Society kind of like Sons of Anarchy type vibes because we all ride bicycles and like we're all in like bad neighborhoods, but we drink good beer and we like do good for the public. So we've sponsored events. We've brought good beer to events. We've done bottle shares at restaurants and bars, which allow us to go and basically buy food, tip out the staff, and then open a ton of beer and share with staff, bar owners.
Something else that we're really proud of doing too is bringing a lot of people to places like Bronx Beer Hall, a Bar 180, places that essentially don't have a lot of access to certain neighborhoods. And we were able to show them, like, there's great beer in these places. And, yeah.
Those guys, the soldier, I remember one time, this is by Juan, Bar 180, Bar 177, or Presidente. So I remember that some way you got to have it in a van, and they call the police on you guys.
Yeah, we basically had a bottle share... the Cloisters. We had a bottle share. Someone we was trying to do some. We always
location.
Every month.
High class.
Every month we try to do a cultural bottle share and switch it up. Like it's boring to just open beer.
Was that a tapestry viewing party as well?
So we did a bottle share awesome. On the waterfront with Uptown Runners, which is like these guys that run for miles and stuff. And someone wrote a letter to the local precinct and said that we were gonna do that. So police came. Thank God I wasn't there yet with all the dope beer I had. But we basically took that shit to Harlem.
They look at you
and
with
still
a picture.
Turned up.
Like,
yeah.
You see this guy here?
We got haters.
Oh, they had a picture of him?
Yeah.
The Beer Outlaws. That's awesome. Yeah.
The cold ones.
Trademark.
And this is Anthony from the Bronx Beer Hall, and I want to say first thanks to everyone for just the support and shouting us out. I mean, it means a lot to
us. Cheers.
when we started it, you know, we started it really for ourselves. We were tired of going to Manhattan to drink, and we wanted to stay in the Bronx, you know? And we were like, yeah, what would we do if we were in the Bronx? What kind of place would we open? And you know, we did it, and, you know, you guys embraced it, and we really appreciate that. But I also want to say what I think is a big deal, and, you know, we've had a small business now for 12 years, and we had the bar for 6 years, is that it's a big deal for all these different companies to be supporting one another. Because, you know, you open a small business in New York, and New York's a tough place to run a business, and everyone thinks they're, you know, you're competing with them. Oh, this guy's trying to take money out of my mouth. They're trying to take money from my kids. And it's not the way, you know, we do business. It's not the way it is. And so I think it's a big deal that, you know, all these companies of color can get together, support one another, and we all eat out of the same project.
Exactly. Come get a plate.
Yeah, that's right.
Come get a plate.
The Bronx Beer Hall actually hosted Joel and I with Uptown Beer Society. We collaborated with an underground brewery called First Borough Brewing. Awesome guys with a little brewery in their basement in the Bronx. And we made a beer inspired by my mother's candy yams, and we used the proceeds of the donations from the beer with Bronx Beer Hall, and we made a big donation to Puerto Rico and the hurricane relief.
Yeah, right. Big breweries can't donate to Latin countries who are suffering.
That's right.
Well, we can.
Think about small businesses. You guys are right about working together, because at the end of the day, it's almost like craft breweries versus the big macro. You're only a small slice of the pie. You know, most people are going to chain restaurants, chain stores, and so anything you guys are doing is only a ripple effect. You know, so there could be 1,000 businesses like yours working together, and you still would have an uphill battle. So I'm proud of you guys. You're doing a great job.
That's exactly perfect. I mean, this is why we're doing what we're doing. It's genius. You know, Joel's perfect for the sampler and our mission to introduce craft beer to our communities, people that are not traditionally known to be drinking craft beer. Like, I mean, I think Jesse was referring making references to before, like the bearded guy with the flannel shirt, you know, drinking craft beer. Latinos and blacks.
My flannel.
The flannel. You
and the beard.
And the beard. But they got this introduction will only benefit, actually, all these craft beer, the industry in general. I mean, if you don't know, I mean, the population of Latinos in New York is pretty astronomical. If you go to Washington Heights, it's pretty much a country up there of Dominicans. And they like craft beer, and they know about Interboro. Where do you think they're going to buy their next beer from? It's going to be from Interboro.
We're all about just embracing who you are and take whatever lifestyle, culture that is authentic to you and fuse that with craft beer. That's it. Everybody, we love beer. And we're all different, and that's, you know, it just, let's embrace each other and just make shit accessible.
I think a lot of what's cool about craft beer it fits really well in New York City, because it's about defining community in a lot of ways. It's a way of taking a sort of niche thing that you're into that doesn't necessarily define who you are, but you're able to invest your personality in it, and you invest your style in it, and you're able to invest your, you know, sort of, you know, in a lot of ways, in craft beer, we talk about it, and you know, you're sort of voting with your money, right? Like you're gonna spend your money buying things that you believe in, and I think New York City, with its very diverse communities all over the city, it's a great city for creating these niche products or businesses or, you know, sort of scenes or cultures or whatever. And so, you know, what I really like about the El Prez and the Dead Prez project is how we sort of been able to bring together a bunch of different communities and get behind something that everybody can believe in and is supporting, like I said earlier, so many different businesses getting involved behind one project. So we're able to amplify it really, really loudly and really make a lot of noise about it.
And then next steps, Joel, what are you going
to
do next?
I just wanted to give a big shout out to Harlem Hops in Harlem. First 100% black-owned craft beer bar.
Kevin.
Shout outs to them. There's also another beer store bar called Craft Culture, which is Ecuadorian-owned. So shout outs to them. And there's probably a ton that we're trying to, you know, form this kind of Avengers thing and, like, just continue collaborations around the five boroughs. And shout outs to Killsboro, too, which is half Puerto Rican owned. They have a black taproom manager, and they're giving jobs back to people of color. So shout out to them as well.
Great.
Can we send here in the spot, like, what we're going to be brewing for the next?
That's what I want to know, yeah.
Let's see. What's going
on? What's the next collaboration?
Yeah. No, no pressure, Jesse. No pressure.
Let's put some pressure on.
We're going to go back to the cloisters big time.
Well, we actually
tamarind, barrel aged, imperial porter.
Hey. We actually might do a liquor this year with Jesse. We were talking about doing a spirit that's kind of reminiscent of Bugatti. Yeah.
That's right. So, Innenborough, your beer and spirits.
Yes.
On that note, quick back. So the El Perez was such a successful Pilsner. Jesse, as a brewer, you know, there's recipes out there, but then there's recipes. What was it like for you making that beer? Was it any different from another Pilsner? Did you really have to
Well, with the El Perez, what we really tried to focus on was a hop character that would be, you know, more sort of tropical and sort of have hints of what people think about when they're going to Dominican Republic, as opposed to like a real straight noble hop character. So, damn, if I can remember what
Styrian
we actually.
Styrian dragon hints of melon and passion fruit.
No. Styrian.
I'm sorry.
Styrian dragon. Yeah. Styrian. So we did. We did pick a hop for that beer that was very specifically like tropical in character. And for the Dead Prez too, we chose a German hop that had like a Hummelin, which is got like a melon character, but it's still a German hop. So every single one, both these beers, we've crafted in a way where we're sort of making flavors that we think of as tropical or Dominican or whatever you want to call it. But we're still, I mean, my goal is definitely been just to make beers that people can drink and say, oh, that's beer. You know what I mean? Because we didn't want to make anything that was too, you know, outside the realm of, hey, we're making a Pilsner, hey, we're making a lager. We wanted to make beers that people who like beer would drink.
All right. Guys, you guys are awesome. Let's quickly, everyone, introduce themselves one more time, and we're going to have to sign off.
Joel Suarez from the Sampler and Uptown Beer Society.
Shane Montero from Carmine Street Beers in the West Village.
Anthony Ramirez from the Bronx Beer Hall in the Bronx.
Paul Ramirez in the Bronx Beer Hall.
Matt from Uptown Beer Society and The Sampler.
Jesse from Innenborough in Brooklyn, New York City.
Leo from The Sampler in Bushwick and Beer Wax in Prospect Heights.
Juan from Bar 180 and Bar 177.
And soon Bar Jet Blue.
Chris Maestro from Beer Wax and Prospect Heights.
Wow, this was a great show, guys. What a way to kick off 2019.
Yeah.
And it's, again, the beer I've been thinking about for weeks, and it's inspiring me, and you guys are doing a great job. We'll do a lot more of these collaboration shows. Big shout out. Thanks, everybody. Producer Justin Kennedy, engineer Matt Patterson, Dylan Hoyer, our intern. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like Why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.